Meow! Welcome to the Cat Tunes Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Corelli. On this podcast, I'm going to talk about the stories behind my songs, the production tools that I've used, the production methods that I've employed, the instruments that I've played, the instruments that I've discovered, the arrangement methods that I've used, the real-life stories which precipitated the creation of my entire albums or of my separate tracks. So let's jump right into it, shall we? And welcome you listening to the Cat Tunes Podcast. This is episode 68. And this is the first episode of the fifth season, or should I say, well, the fifth album. This is going to be the fifth album that I'm going to cover on this podcast. Now, I've had a poll set up on YouTube and on my Telegram channel, and the album that won in this polling was Love in Space. Love in Space was released just recently, on April 18th, and I don't know, it's sort of perhaps compared to my other works, to my other releases over the past 2 years, it appears to be more modern. Which it kind of is, but not completely, because the album itself was written, it was in production, let's be more specific here, it was in production between summer 2012 and spring 2014, roughly for 2 years. It is a collaborative effort. Back in 2012, I've had a client who wanted to work with me as a co-producer, and back then not that much as a co-composer, but it turned out that I've become a co-composer as well, and I've written roughly half of this material. The name of that client was Leonid Korolev. Originally my job was to arrange, to write the instrumentation, to do that kind of stuff on all this material. Leo brought me just rough, those are not even sketches, it's like just ideas, basically. So it's like chord progressions, and no lyrics, a few melodies here and there. It was very rough, I got into it, and I started composing, filling in the blanks, basically, because that's quite often where I end up. So, you start working on the original material, and you use basically just the chord progression, and you use the original melodies, which the client wants to preserve, and that's where I started. But then, subsequently, after the first track was done, as far as I remember, it was Your Desperate World, which on the album is the ninth track. Then we moved on to other tracks, and he brought in some more material, and then as the work on the album progressed over the months, roughly over the course of a year, well into 2013, I've already had everything arranged and all the blanks composed and all the lyrics written, but now, in 2013, we were going to go into a studio and record this album actually with live instruments, with real drums, and with a bass guitar and with real guitars and that kind of stuff. Because in 2013, I basically had just rough demos. Well, I call them rough, they're not studio demos. They were pretty rough production-wise. I don't make demos like this nowadays. And I didn't really play guitar. I picked up a guitar back in 2013. And kind of try to play something, just to illustrate what kind of guitar parts are needed. It was a collaborative effort. There are whole sections in some tracks which are written by myself, fully. There are little bridges here and there, melodies which Leo did not write. And some melodies he wrote, and then some of the melodies I had to adjust because I was also the one who was writing the lyrics. And I was actually developing the whole concept of the album. And in the beginning, I didn't really know what this album is going to be about. We've had a lot of conversations with Leo about religion, about values, about beliefs, about spirituality, about this kind of stuff. And Leo was kind of skeptical, at the time at least. He was very skeptical and he was he was in denial of spirituality, let's put it this way. He's a businessman, let's start there. He's a business guy, an ex-priest. At the time, he used to be a priest. He had his logistics company in Moscow, and top manager kind of guy, this type of stuff. And he really wanted to become a rock star. So he wanted a rock album. Well, it turned out to be rather like a prog rock, art rock, experimental rock kind of thing. Not exactly metal. I don't think that this album, Love in Space, this is really a metal album. I don't believe so. So he came to me, and he has like, he sings something in a rather kind of classical, academic kind of way. Some Russian stuff. He doesn't speak English, so that was an impediment later. And Leo didn't know how to sing rock songs. I mean, he just doesn't have that skill. He doesn't have the cultural background to do that. He's just not introduced to all of that rock stuff. And he definitely wasn't on the same page where I was, because I at the time was heavily, as usual, listening to Korn, Slipknot, Bring Me the Horizon, this kind of stuff. And he didn't know any of that music. So to him, it was weird. And I was trying, of course, to skew everything, all of this material, towards something more. I was trying to modernize this, let's put it this way. I was trying to make it rock, and I was trying to modernize this, because I didn't want it to sound too, I don't know what's the word, too old-fashioned and inappropriate. I wanted it to be in style. So I was trying to root out certain chord progressions, and some of them I did root out, and others I couldn't, because, you know, Leo insisted, etc., etc. So it was a very difficult process, essentially. I didn't want it to sound dowdy. I wanted it to sound fresh. Now, Leo, he was excited. His major influence, perhaps maybe one of the few actual mainstream bands that he knew, was Muse. I used to listen to Muse back in the year 2000, I believe, 2000, 2001. I think I had like a couple of their albums. One of them was Origins of Symmetry, I think it was called. And I knew that Matthew Bellamy, I think that was the name of the singer, the frontman, he was a huge fan of Rachmaninoff. And I was a huge fan of Rachmaninoff as well. So I kind of appreciated where he was going with Muse's music, what he was doing, but at the same time, I found it kind of not exactly to my taste. I liked something spicier. I liked something heavier. I liked something juicier, something beefier. You know, like exactly along the lines of, you know, Slipknot, for example, with all that kind of riffing, the darker stuff. Or Korn. But Leo wasn't introduced to that music. Anyways, so it turned out to be like a blending of influences that went into it. And getting back to the beginning of this production, so I don't exactly remember, I can't tell you in what order did I start working on these tracks. I think for the most part, probably they were in album order, the way they turned out, or maybe I've thrown them around just a little bit, but High Tide was fairly somewhere in the beginning of the list, as far as I remember. It was one of the first tracks that I got to work on. And I originally didn't really know, and by the way, High Tide is going to be the first track that I'm going to be talking about today. Originally, I really didn't know what to do with the rough sketch that Leo provided for High Tide. And by the way, High Tide is going to be the first track, is the first track on the album, and it's going to be the first track that I'm going to be talking about. And then I'll go, just as usual, I'll go track after track throughout, you know, the whole album, till the 10th track. So, originally when Leo brought me this sketch, or sent it to me, I don't remember, I didn't really know what to do with it, because the way I thought about songs, even if it's like prog metal or something like this, it needs a hook. It needs something. You can't just go with, you know, free form whatever if it's a song. Because, I mean, the listener just won't appreciate this if we're talking about songs, unless we're talking about abstract art or something like this. So, that was a challenge, because Leo, in his sketches, he didn't have actual hooks. He had just a free-flowing, classical-like chord progression, and some semblance of melody, something, which wasn't really worked out all the way through. And he was a huge fan of, like, yeah, I understand, he wanted to replicate something like, you know, the classic composers, like Beethoven, perhaps, or Tchaikovsky, something along those lines. I don't know about Rachmaninoff, because he rather sounded, his chord progressions rather reminded me of someone like Beethoven, at best, but not really Rachmaninoff. He didn't modulate that much, it was all pretty standard, so to speak. So that was one of the big challenges. And then the other challenge, of course, was what is this album going to be about? Because usually, when I'm thinking about an album, and I know that I'm going to be working on a whole album, I need a theme. I need to stick to something, because the songs need to form a pattern. They need to explore some themes. I don't just put random songs that I've written, you know, into an album and call it an album. That doesn't happen. It doesn't become an album just because you put songs together. You need something that unifies all of these songs. And I'm talking not just about the sound production and the tone and the instrumentation and those kind of things. No, also a theme. Something that knits all of these songs together into one coherent body of work. That's how I think about it. So, He Brings High Tide, it doesn't have any lyrics. And I think High Tide was actually the first lyrics that I've written, perhaps. I don't remember anything before that. Yeah, I think High Tide was the first piece of lyrics that I've written, and I will read them to you. Of course, this time I have them printed out because I was recording vocals fairly recently, in late March. So, High Tide, actually, let me put it this way. I think the whole album is rather about, it's like a conversation between a person, a protagonist, if you will, and God, or the goddess. Here in this album, it's rather the god, in that sense, it's he. It's also a fatherly figure, so it is like, maybe it's the father, maybe it's God, the Lord, something along those lines. And it's also a conversation with oneself, because you're asking yourself a lot of questions along as this album progresses, and some of these questions are very uncomfortable. Ultimately, this album, I think, Love in Space, is about figuring out... It's not that much descriptive, it's more introspective. Let me put it this way. And so, I will read the lyrics, and I think you will start to understand the general theme. Where is this album going? So, we have fled from where we were crawling to. From the bottom of a dead sea to a vacant sky. The doomsday wind inspires a poisoned lullaby that echoes in the world we've lost and brings us to the emptiness within. Wherein the curtains fall, wherein we're scared to face it all. But until the high tide begins, believe that you live and commit your sins. Yet you want to know more than you forego. But you can't live like you seemed to live just a second ago. I can't go to where you were struggling to go, from the bottom of a hollow heart to an empty eye. You will not ask me when, I'll never tell you why. The silence in the world we trusted leads us to the painfulness within, wherein illusions die, wherein you hold on not to cry, until the high tide begins. Believe that. You love and commit your sins. There's nothing anymore that we can ignore. And now we will live like we had never lived before. Like we have never lived before. So these are the lyrics for High Tide. And I usually like to pick a title for a song that is telling. When you look at the title, and it already sets the stage for something. Now, High Tide, apparently, it's about self-exploration. It's about rising concerns. It's about, basically, at the time, there were a few people in my life, including myself, who needed some introspection. And I have noticed over the years that one of the most difficult things for people to do is to face themselves. It's the most horrifying experience to a lot of people. It's so hard to look into your heart and to truthfully, honestly admit who you really are. To face your shadow self. And mind you, back in the day when I was working on this album, when I started working on this album, back in 2012, 2013, I never even heard of Carl Jung and the concept of the shadow self. Never heard of it. But I kind of knew that it should be there. You can hear it on my earlier album, Overcome, in the earlier tracks when I was trying to grasp it. Something that I believed intrinsically for the longest time, that in order to make it through life, one has to accept and tame one's shadow self. So essentially, I think on Love in Space, this is what I'm getting at, but from a slightly different angle. So this High Tide track, it is not necessarily about me. I'm not talking about we have fled. What do I mean here by we? This is like me and you. Me and you, my lover, perhaps my man, or someone who I'm in love with. Or, more broadly speaking, you, meaning any you, any person, and I'm talking to you. That's what it is. So, the rest is pretty self-explanatory. It says right there, wherein the curtains fall, or wherein illusions die. When you venture into the abysmal depths of yourself, you know that you cannot lie. You know that illusions cannot survive down there, because deep down, in your hearts of hearts, you know the truth. You know if you've done something wrong. You know if you've committed something that is truly malevolent and evil. You know it. You can't lie to yourself. You can pretend on the surface. You can try to fool other people, but you can't fool yourself. You know it. And it haunts you. If you've done something wrong, it will haunt you. You know it. And it's impossible to maintain for too long. Even if you compartmentalize things really well, it's still impossible to completely dissociate from the truth. Or this is at least what I believe. So, I'm hoping that I've laid out more or less the foundation for this episode is kind of like an intro for the Love in Space album. You see, I've told you some generic stuff in the beginning and ready the lyrics as usual, and I don't want to turn this into an hour-long episode. So with that being said, let's move on to the next section, which is going to be the music analysis of this piece, all right? So here we go with the music analysis. Just as usual, I like to lay out the basics in the beginning. So, we're in the key of D minor, and the BPM is 80 BPM. It's a fairly slow track. And there is plenty of instrumentation. I don't even want to go into it too much. I'll just say that I was trying at the time to combine lots of electronic stuff, including electronic drum loops and synthesizers and piano and string sections, you know, to give it a symphonic feel, with actual electric guitars, bass, drums, and vocals. So let's listen to the intro, get to the first verse, then I will pause it, and then I will comment, all right? Let's listen. So there we go. This was the intro. And you just heard it. There's plenty of stuff going on there. I'm not really going to try to play the piano part because it's pretty fancy. And all those parts, all those instruments inside are very fancy. So as usual, I'll boil it down to a simple chord progression and give just some commentary. So the sample in the beginning, that weird noise that starts the song, that's actually a slowed down and drop pitched, I think a couple of octaves down, a sample of a train, of an old-fashioned train that arrives at a train station. And that's actually the train's honk, but it's because it's so slow and low, it doesn't sound like one. And in the background, there is some woman's voice with a heavy radio effect that says something about a countdown that's about to start. See, in the very beginning, at the when I just started writing lyrics for this album, the working title for this album was T-10, and the idea behind the whole album was that it's going to be a countdown, and every song is going to be a countdown to the last track. And first I thought that I would, you know, conclude the album with something tragic. Then I thought that maybe I can make the whole album into a little journey of self-discovery, or perhaps even discovery of love and meaning, and sort of a straightening out of a relationship with, you know, the higher power, be that a god or a goddess. And through that, a journey of change. So I wanted to, in this album, over the course of 10 songs, I wanted to show this transition, this change from the old kind of version of self to a new version of the self through struggle, through suffering, through pain, through passion, through questioning, through all of those things. So High Tide starts with that countdown for a reason. That's why that sample is there. And then we're going straight into the musical part. And here's approximately what's going on there. Wasn't very precise with this second little bridge. To be more specific. So what's going on here? We're starting the melody. There's a D minor. A C major minus 7, B flat major plus 7, then a G minor, A major with a B flat on top. And then it goes basically through the same chord progression, and this time there are some inversions. Like here, for example, a D minor, then a D minor on the base of F, then a C major minus 7 on the base of E, C major minus 7, again B flat major plus 7. A major with a B flat on top, and then we're going into D minor, A major on the bass of E, D minor on the bass of F, and then a B flat minor, essentially. And we're hanging on a little bit, and then after this we're moving into the first verse, to which we're going to listen right now.
We have fled from where we were crawling to, from the bottom of a dead sea to a vacant sky. The doomsday wind inspires a poison lullaby that echoes in the world of lust and brings us to the emptiness within.
So this, believe it or not, was the first verse and the hook. As you can see, this is pretty different. You don't have a well-defined hook really here. It all goes, the verse kind of merges into the hook through, obviously, a more intense instrumentation. And then it just goes to a bridge again. It will go to a bridge a little later. So let's try to analyze this. So we're starting in D minor, and mind you, there are going to be some modulations around here. In this song, it's not all that standard. It's not going to stick to one key necessarily. So,
we have fled from where we were crawling to, from the bottom of a dead sea to a vacant sky. The doomsday wind inspires a poison lullaby that echoes in the world of lust and brings us to the emptiness within. The curtains fall. We're in, we're scared of just a second ago.
So, I apologize for not so very good, for my not so very good vocals right now. Again, this is analysis. I'm playing this when I'm recording music. I don't play at the same time. I actually sing. So the verse starts in D minor, right? Major on the bass of C sharp, A minor on the bass of C, D minor on the bass of B, G minor on the bass of B flat, D minor on the bass of A, there is a diminished 7 chord on the bass of G sharp, a suspended 4th into A major, and then we're going into the hook. We're in, which all of a sudden goes to a D major. We're in, an inversion. There is a lot of these inversions. D major, then D major on the bass of F sharp. We're in G minor on the bass, then inversion on the bass of B flat. A major on the bass of C sharp. The curtains fall. D minor. D minor on the bass of C. We're in. And there is D minor. Oh, no, excuse me. There is a diminished chord on the bass of B. And we're from here on moving to an A minor. Then we have an F sharp minor with a diminished fifth, minus seven. So there is an E major, minus 7, into an A major. So now we're going immediately into an A minor. Believe that, you leave and... And this is, after that, a D minor, minus 7, 9. Commit your sins. And this is an E major into an F major, plus 7. Then immediately we're going into a diminished 7 chord on the bass of G sharp. Yet you want to know, into an A minor. Again, a diminished 7 chord, but this time on the bass of B. More than you for gold. And into an A minor. It's all inversions, basically. Gold. But you won't. But you can't live like you seem to. Just a second ago. So here. So there is a D minor first, then a D minor in the bass of B. E suspended fourth with an added F sharp into an E major. And then, voila, here we are going into the bridge. Let's listen to the bridge. So, what's going on in the bridge? The bridge starts in A minor. Kind of, but really doesn't sound like it's in A minor. It really sounds like it's in E minor. Here's what's going on there. So, A minor to a B major minus 7. E major minus 7 to a B flat major minus 7. Then D minor on the bass of F to an E major. Then E flat major minus 7 plus 9 to an A major with an augmented fifth. A major minus 7 with an augmented fifth. And this sets us up to loop back into the verse and the hook combo. And it's essentially the next verse and the next hook are exactly the same as the first verse and the hook. Melodically, harmonically, it's exactly the same stuff. So I don't think I'm going to be playing through it, but we will listen. You will see that it is different as far as instrumentation and all the... counterpoints and all the added melodic stuff and riffs that all of a sudden appear using the same exact chord progressions. The instrumentation goes through the roof. Rhythmically, everything gets very animated. And then I will stop it after the second verse, after the second hook, and then we will separately dissect the coda, the outro. Alright, so let's listen.
From the bottom of a hollow heart to an empty eye. You will not ask me when, I'll never tell you why. The silence in the world we trusted leads us to the painfulness we feel.
The melody, the vocal melody, the vocal line is exactly the same. The chord progression is exactly the same. What changes is the arrangement, the instrumentation, and what all of these instruments, the guitars, the bass, the drums, the piano, all of them do in the background. And all of a sudden, by the way, it sort of sounds, the second verse sounds almost with a Latin feel, or like a some sort of Latin American feel, because of the pom 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 da dum pom. Dum, 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 dum. The piano is almost playing something from Astor Piazzolla, you could say. And this is where I was drawing influence from. Astor Piazzolla. If you don't know this composer, look him up. Astor Piazzolla. You will not regret it. Quite frankly. So it's the same stuff. And then we're getting to the outro. So the difference in how the difference is just in how the hooks end, because the first time it was but you can't live like you seem to live just a second ago, and the second time it goes into that same thing, but then after that there is a little addition. Now we will live like we had never lived before. But that's not all. Like we had never lived before. It goes down and does some stuff. So that is the difference, and this overlaps with the outro, and it's purposefully done so because, you know, it bridges the two parts, the hook, and that the outro basically right here is like the culminative point of the whole song. Because it doesn't have an obviously outlined hook, and it's not very conventional, the weight of the emphasis goes to the outro. Let's listen to the outro, and I'll give you the harmonic context of it. So there you have it. There you have it. Like
we had never lived before. And it goes here and there.
Then there's a modulation. Let me line by line, because there's a lot here. So there's a D minor, A minor on the base of C, D minor on the base of B, to an E major, then an F major, plus 7, A minor on the base of E, then a diminished 7 chord on the base of D sharp, that resolves into a B flat major minus 7 into an E major minus 7. So it's a tritone replacement thing here. And you would expect that we would go into A minor from here or something like that, or into a D, but we're not. Instead of that, we're going to a B minor minus 7. Which then goes into an E major minus 7, C sharp minor diminished 5th, into an F sharp major minus 7, is a D major minus 7 into an A flat major minus 7 into a D flat major, mind you, minus 7 into a G major minus 7. And then after all of this lunacy, we're diving into an F sharp minor. With a couple of passing little things here, you know. So it's an F minor, F sharp minor, excuse me. Then it goes F sharp minor plus 7 and a minus 7 . Then there is an odd C minor on the base of E flat, which goes into an A flat major minus 7 with an added D. So here's what it sounds like. To a D major minus 7 plus 9. And then we're going into an F sharp major plus 7. Then we're going into a C sharp major plus 7. Into a G major minus 7 with an augmented 5th with an added E flat, so to speak. And we land finally in a C major plus 7. You see what happened. And basically, this is the music analysis. With that being said, let's move on to the next section, shall we? As you can hear, High Tide, well, it basically sets the tone and it sets the stage for the entire album to come. And some of the songs are kind of more simplistic and not, they don't sound that quote-unquote classical, really. Some of them. Others do. High Tide is more, I guess, of a quote-unquote classical piece because it utilizes all of these standard classical chord progressions, which, quite frankly, I'm usually having a hard time describing in chord language, because that's not how you think when you play it. It's much easier to just write out the charts, all right, and to just show what's going on there. But then when you have to explain it, you know, and it's sort of, I'm simplifying everything down to just, you know, like C major plus 7, whatever. I am giving you a cumulative of what's happening at the moment, because you have to take into account not only the bass line, what the bass is doing on a given beat, but also, you know, what's the guitar chord, if any, or the keyboard chord, if any, or what the strings are doing, if they're doing anything, or what's that synthesizer over there doing, and also what the melody is doing, because quite often, the way I like to write things is that the chord itself, or the bass line, or the guitar, they do not really create a 7 chord or a 9 chord. But what creates the 7, 9, or 13, or something along those lines, some chord like that, is the melody, which hangs there, and it uses the bits of a sort of a ghost chord. The chord itself is comprised of everything that's happening at the time, not merely just the accompaniment to the melody. So quite often, I like in the beginning, pa 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 pa. The melody is going down a minor triad. That's what it's doing. But because it happens, you know, A F D sings the melody, pa pa pa. But at the same time, the bass line and the guitarists are going, bomb, they're sitting on the B-flat. So that creates the B-flat major plus 7 chord. There is going to be a lot of music like this on this album, and I've actually done something different this time. And instead of trying to pick everything by ear, what I've done, I went into the original projects, to the original Reason projects, where I was programming everything and writing everything out. And so I just wrote out a whole sheet of these chord chains so that I can give them to you in more precise and coherent language so that I wouldn't sit there and just, you know, oh, wait a second, what was that? I trust my ears, but it's better to have it right in front of your eyes rather than pull it from memory every time. So I'm hoping that it kind of sped up things a little bit, granted that this is not a simplistic album. This is nothing like Reborn Heart. Reborn Heart is so much easier than this one. This one is tough. In terms of chord progressions, there is a lot of things going on. There is a lot of instrumentation. There is a lot of influences that go into it. There is a lot of things per cubic bar that are happening at the same time in terms of everything. It's just a lot. And I'm trying to keep it simple, I'm trying to keep it comprehensive, alright? I think probably after I wrap up this album, I will make an extra couple of episodes, and I will just talk about what was it like producing this album, writing this album, I mean the writing process itself overall, how did I approach it, and then maybe an extra episode about what the work, the studio work, what did that entail. So I think I will talk about each and every song, 10 tracks, focus on them like I do in regular episodes, and then I will add a couple of extra episodes and I will talk overall about the album, because there's just a lot. There's really just a lot. So with that being said, I think I'll be wrapping up this episode. Thank you for voting on this album. When I'm done with Love in Space, I will again set up a poll, both on my YouTube channel and on my Telegram channel. And once again, I will set up some more albums for you to vote on, and I will continue covering my music and explaining. You know, I'm hoping that the explanations that I'm giving and some of these insights might be helpful to someone who is just getting started with songwriting, composition, arrangement of things, instrumentation, these kind of things. Might be helpful or useful, or at least insightful to some people who are interested in this topic. So thank you for listening to this episode. I appreciate you. I want to make a shout out to my business. I want to invite you to check out 7caracol.com. This is where I'm selling. This is where you can find some of my skin health and aromatherapy products. I do have a line of soaps, shampoo bars, lotions, which are purely focused on skin health specifically. So if you have problematic skin, if you have dry skin or eczema, psoriasis, or poison ivy, you got into some seasonal trouble with poison ivy or poison sumac or something like that, our oatmeal honey soap will help you to heal your skin. And also, I do have an aromatherapy line of soaps, all sorts of flavors. We're going to be changing up a few things fairly soon, I think in a couple of months. But meanwhile, we still do have in stock some of our old and trusted flavors. So please check out southerncaracol.com. Pick something for yourself or for your relatives and friends, and your skin will thank you, and their skin will thank you too. Also, if you haven't heard any of my music yet and you're just brand new to this podcast but you want to check me out, look up Catherine Corelli, Catherine with a C, Corelli with a C, on any major streaming platform, and you will find something. You will find a lot of my music out there, and you'll hopefully will find something to your taste, because I got some heavier stuff, I got some lighter stuff, I got some pop music, I got some instrumental music, plenty of music. Check it out. Speaking of which, I'm also on YouTube. I do have an official channel. If you want to check out my process and how I record guitars, for example, for a Natural Grotesque album, or how did I sing vocals for the Seraphic Tears album, check out my Cat Vibes playlist. It has some more casual footage there. And there is plenty of these production videos that you might want to check out. And perhaps you'll pick on something for yourself, and maybe that can be helpful as well. And of course, if you like my YouTube channel, please subscribe. I'll appreciate this. So with that being said, thank you very much for being on this episode. Thank you for checking out this podcast. I love you, and you will hear me on the next episode.